All right. Chief Superintendent Aidan Glacken has described the drug problem in this county as a cancer on society. He says parents across Donegal have had to remortgage their homes in order to help pay off drug debts that have been amassed by family members. And this is one experience of a listener to this programme who contacted us this morning. 1 gram of cocaine in Donegal is 70, 80 euro, and they would use about 6 grams in a day, and it depends on their use. Some would use it more. The drug dealers come to your home and come at all times of the day and night, so it's hard to control what your son or daughter is at. We get very little sleep because we're watching where they are, what they've taken. It can be delivered within 15 minutes of making the order via the social media apps. Because of the cost, young people have to often start selling drugs to meet their addiction costs. Most drugs users are thieves and liars. Nothing is off limits for them to do because the habit needs fed. I'd like to see more sniffer dogs brought into the county to help with the issue in pubs and clubs. We are lucky insofar as we didn't have to remortgage, but it did cost us thousands in paying off that debt. I would appeal to every parent to speak to your GP to help get them drug treatment. Drug treatments are about 6,000 euro, but if you're on a medical card, you can get that free. Most treatments are a month to 3 months long with follow-up meetings. Signs to watch out for is their eyes, not eating, sleeping. I've found my children's drugs in the smoke alarms, stuck under drawers, in socks in the drawer, behind photos on the wall. Drugs gives them tunnel vision. As long as they get what they want, they're happy. But staying in educational work is impossible. That's one family's experience of a child in the house using drugs. They had to pay thousands of euro to pay off their drugs debt. This is to people trading in illegal activity. Thankfully, in this situation, they didn't have to remortgage, but clearly a huge financial expense on that family. Councillor Jay McMonagle, Chair of the Donegal Joint Policing Committee. I mean, you don't know what other people are going through, are you? That's just one example of an entire family affected by someone's drug addiction.
Yeah, and look, your heart goes out to that lady and her family, and indeed many other similar type families who are in the same type of situation. This is a growing problem. It's something that I raised at the JPC because in recent times there is more and more families coming to the likes of myself who and raising the concerns or telling the stories about the threats and intimidation that they're under due to maybe one of their siblings or children have got involved in taking drugs. And this is the dark side of taking drugs, recreational or otherwise, as they're sometimes described. But if it gets a hold of you, that you'll do anything in to keep using, you may get involved in crime, or you'll start borrowing money of friends, family, and then it gets to the stage where, as the lady outlined, you end up selling the drug. And it is not these sort of sinister people who are coming to your door. It is the friends or the former friends of your son or daughter who are coming to your door who you know.
But there are enforcers too, though, for the big money that will come up from Sligo and other parts of the country as well. And how do you address that? Because if you go to the guards, they'll threaten you and say, well, the next time we visit or if you go to the Gardaí, things will get worse for you. I suppose you'd almost have to admit illegal activity is happening in the household. Like the drug dealers have you cornered every which way. Now, we're not saying that people shouldn't go to the guards, but I imagine that's how people feel, that they have to deal with this themselves internally. It's just an absolute nightmare, Jerry.
Yeah, and as I say, I've heard the story, I've listened to them, and yes, they do use the sinister people. Either deal with me or do you want me to go and get the people to come here and they'll wreck your house and they'll break your legs and all of this. Them's the type of threats that they're issuing to families. And just recently, I mean, in the last week or 10 days, a family had to go and borrow money out of the credit union coming up to Christmas to pay off a drug debt for one of their children. And it's just ruined Christmas for them. They've tried to help and assist their child, and it's very good advice come from that lady today and by getting that help and support. But I think we need to be there and show the families that we're here and we're here to support them. The Gardaí is certainly there to support them. We recently, earlier this year, we brought up a detective superintendent from the National Drugs Unit who gave us a presentation on the type of crime that we're talking about, that drug debt intimidation. and how we could thwart it. And it's about talking to people. It's about being open about it. It's about going to the Gardaí and reporting it. But one of the things that the lady pointed out there about the help and assistance, we also need to put more resources into rehabilitation for people, young people in particular, who find themselves caught up with drugs. And far more supports. But look, the first port of call is, and if people don't want to go directly to the Gardaí, feel free to contact me. I will be the conduit for them. I've done it in the past. But you need to make that bold step, and you will get the full support of the Gardaí.
Well, listen, I appreciate Chief Superintendent Aidan Glacken recognising there is a problem, but he's the top cop here in the county. Do you know? So we also need solutions here. There's been an awful lot of drugs seized in this county in the last year, but if the truth be told, and I'm not criticising the Gardaí, it kind of fell on their laps a little bit, the majority of it. It was washed up on shore. So we have an awful lot of drugs in this county. We don't have a great deal of detection. We've got the senior guard recognising that there is a problem. He's calling it a cancer on society. Now we need to start talking about, right, okay, the JPC recognises it, the top cop recognises it, the media recognises it, the public know about it. What are we actually going to do now going forward? Because I think things are getting worse rather than better, Gerry. So do you recognise what I'm saying there, and what do you think the solution might be?
Yeah, well, look, and you're right in what you've just said. But I think there was some very positive news come out of the JPC last Friday as well, in that the drug unit has been reformed. There's six officers and a sergeant now in place to look at and deal with the drug pandemic that we have in this county, because drugs is readily and freely, readily available on a phone call or a WhatsApp message. So there's a lot of work to be done. But I have to say also, Greg, that there has been a lot of drug detections other than the ones that was got on the beach. But we need more, and we need more enforcement. And that's an issue too that we have with the Garda, and you're well versed in that. We've had the Garda representatives coming on and talking about the lack of resources and the pressures they're under. But I think that was a really good news story come out of the JPC, that the drug units has been reinstated. Yeah. There's now six officers and a sergeant, and I would expect that they will get the work straight away, and that we will start seeing more results from the work that they'll do.
Like, but what tools do they have at their disposal? Now, I don't expect you to be across everything, but, you know, in premises, undercover, do they contact people on social media and nab them as they deliver their drugs? Will they stop and search people on the streets to see if they're carrying drugs? Or is there any surveillance to see, you know, what kind of activity is ongoing? Because I think a lot of people listening would say they will know what's happening and they know who's doing it. And then they start sort of getting frustrated that they, the criminals, feel that they can sort of operate without any fear of apprehension, if you know what I mean. So it's good to have the numbers there, Gerry. Would it be useful maybe for the Gardaí, without compromising anything operational, to sort of help us understand how they are going to work to try and get to the bottom of these issues?
Yeah, and look, and the criminals involved are smart as well in how they go about their business. They're very careful. But intelligence is everything. And community can help the Gardaí with that intelligence. If they see it ongoing, you know, and we anecdotally we hear people saying, ah, good, there's on our street, there's three or four of them. But has that information ever been passed on? You know, formally, give the Garda intelligence. They have that unit there now. They can act on the intelligence. If they don't, you can go and ask them, well, I've told you this, I've told you that. It's still continuing 3 weeks later. What's happening here? You know, so there is a responsibility now on the drugs unit that's been put in place to deliver. But they need the help and support, and intelligence is everything in that regard.
You know, we hear about vapes, and it's quite important that we talk about that. Of course, young people using vapes and schools are involved and all that kind of stuff. Is enough being done? And again, I don't expect you to be across everything that's happening in every school. I wonder, is enough being done in terms of education to educate young people, you know, that this can become a major problem in your life, that in purchasing drugs, you are facilitating this industry as well, you know, this criminal activity. Because I think there's kind of, especially if you only consume media, there's this sense that it glamorizes it, you know, and that a bit of coke's okay, it doesn't do you harm, it's not as bad as drinking, all that kind of stuff. I'm not subscribing to that, of course. I wonder, are we doing enough in terms of education to give our children the best start to make the right choices?
Yeah, well, one of the suggestions I made at the JPC meeting last Friday was that in early New Year that we would start an awareness campaign, and that would involve going into schools. We have the youth councils, and I think it would be a fantastic initiative for them to take it into their schools, talk to their peers, and bring along the Gardaí, and if possible, if somebody was willing, someone who's been a victim of the drugs gangs, they tell their story, like we do with the road traffic accidents and all of that,
yeah.
Road safety.
I think that'd be really useful, yeah.
We do something like that, and we raise the awareness. And it's just not about what drugs do to you, but it's what it does then to the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And what it opens up a whole quagmire of issues and problems, taking drugs.
Like when you think of, you know, we can talk about if there's enough detection, drink and drug driving detection, what have you. What do you think the amount of people that are detected with drugs in their system driving? And that's only the ones that are driving, and that's only the ones that happen to stumble upon a checkpoint. It really, I think, gives you an example. It's like testing the water for stuff. It really gives you an example of how broad the use of drugs must be. One other story here from a listener. It's an important one as well, Jerry. Just another family devastated by drugs. I worked hard to pay off my daughter's drug debts, but they then victimized her at every available corner, following her, getting her friends to give the drugs to her for free again to try and get her hooked. She ended up having to move to Australia to get away. We as a family face this choice between letting her go to Australia with no one there to keep an eye on her, but knowing she was safely off drugs, or keeping her here and risking her being back addicted to drugs again. I mean, and that's a struggle privately in that house. You can only imagine the heartbreak and turmoil. It's just unbelievable, Jerry.
And it continues for all the victims. I mean, even after you pay the debt, they do what that person has just said. They continue to bully, they coerce, try to get them back into the drugs, taking drugs, because they know how lucrative it is for them. So, look, everything that we can do, we should be doing. And, you know, I know times people think about, you know, I don't want to be a snitch or anything like that. You're not being a snitch. You're giving the Garda the needed intelligence to clean up this drug problem, because it's bringing so much misery to families right across this county.
Right, okay. Listen, thanks for your time. I do appreciate it. That's Councillor Jerry McMonagall, Chair of the Donegal Joint Policing Committee, to help us understand, please, and to get the message home. Nothing gets a message home like personal stories. And I know it's tough, but if you have any personal stories that you want to share about that, about addiction, about paying off, or having to borrow to pay off, or work really hard to pay off these drug addictions, please share them with us if you want to, and if you feel it would help. You can contact us in absolute confidence, 074-91-25000. Okay, and you've been very busy on the lines today as well. I really do appreciate it. I'm bowled over by the level of interaction we have on this show. Coming up, we will be chatting to Michael English, brilliant performer. He's coming live to Letterkenny Monday night as part of our fantastic lineup for our Christmas concert. Have you a particular David, have you a particular Michael English song that you like that I can play as we come out of that interview? Let us know. What's your favourite Michael English song? 086 60 25000. Now, the Highland Radio Christmas concert is just around the corner. It's on Monday night, takes place at the Mount Errigal Hotel. The doors will open for you at 7:30 and the show starts at 8:30pm sharp. It's a great lineup, as always. John McNichol, Claudia Buckley, David James, Jack Keogh, promises to be a brilliant night, as well as all of those people that I mentioned. Amongst them will be Michael English. Michael, good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. Great to talk to you.
Great to have you back on the show. How are you keeping, Michael? Flat out,
I'm very good. Yeah, I'm very good. Thanks, Greg. Yeah, it's raining heavily here in Kildare. I'm just getting ready to head to Wexford. We're in Wexford at a concert tonight. So all go, but going well, thank God.
It is all go. How do you look after yourself with so many concerts and, you know, an expectation from your audience to give the usual level of energy and performance? It must be something you have to get used to, Michael. I know it's enjoyable, but still, it is work.
Yeah, I suppose it's the same as everybody else doing their jobs. I suppose you get used to it, and it's a way of life, really. I suppose you have to mind yourself and get enough sleep and get enough. Water is my lifesaver. I drink a lot of water. I find that keeps me good. And I go home every night and to my own bed. So I have a routine. Even though you're home late, a lot of the time, I wouldn't be one to sleep on in the mornings. That's the only problem I have. I wake at 8 o'clock, no matter what time I'm home. So, but I have a good routine and keep myself reasonably fit and walking and that kind of thing. So,
yeah, very good. And that's the walking also is good to shower the head as well as anything else. I mean, you know, a lot of us are looking towards and looking forward to Monday night, looking forward to Christmas. But I suppose, I mean, you're from a touring or performing point of view, you've got your eyes all over 2024 already, I'm sure, well all over it.
Yeah, a lot of the dates are done now, yeah. We tend to do a lot of the dates a year in advance, so we know exactly where we're going to be. We'll be here in Ireland, we'll be in England, and we're going to America, we're going to Spain on Paul Claffey tours in Portugal, and yeah, so a lot of the dates are done, and it's good, though. It's good to know where you're going to be. And you can plan a little bit better than if you need a break for a couple of days or whatever. You can organise it. So.
Yeah, for sure. Those Paul Claffey tours, we're doing one to Slough next week, next year as well. They sound like good fun from a performer's perspective as well, Michael.
They are, because I suppose, even though you're playing most nights, it's different scenery and it's good weather and the music is full on. But the thing I like about it is a lot of the people that come on it, you know, when we see them in Ireland, we're after a show, we're heading home or whatever. We only see them for a few minutes. We nearly live with the people for a week in Spain and Portugal, and you get to have a bit more time, and they get to know us, and we get to know them. And so, yeah, it's full on dance and music from the time you get up until the time you go to bed.
But yeah, and a lot of return as well, and people form friendships. It's almost another community into itself, isn't it? Those that
like a reunion,
that travel away. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. We were asking people what their favourite songs from yours were. Lots coming in, of course. Maybe not surprising, The Blacksmith and The Barman. A lot of people love that one. And, of course, The Strong Donegal Connections.
Yeah, I wrote The Blacksmith and The Barman after a visit to Cranford, to Logues of Cranford. Because, first of all, the Logue family are lovely people. And when I met them, you know, they reminded me of my own family. You know, you felt very much at home up there. But the history and the stories and about their father, who was a great man, who was a blacksmith, and he had the pub. So I was coming home from playing in Cranford, and I started to write. You know, he was a blacksmith and a barman. And he certainly was known as the man that if anything went wrong, you gave him a call and he would sort it out. So, yeah, it's a popular song, particularly in Donegal, but we sing it from time to time, yeah.
Yeah, you have a new track out too. It's a classic country melody. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, that comes from an album that I'm going to release just early in the new year, and also from a concert tour that I did. Every year I do a concert tour, and I try to bring something a little bit different to the show. And this year it was called A Million Medleys. And the show really was exactly what it says in the tin. It was a million medleys, a million songs that people, going from one song to the other, that people just love to sing and are very familiar with, from artists like John Denver and Elvis Presley and all of the greats. And that came from that then. That track is a medley of country classics that I never got the chance to record yet and always did, so. That's where that came from.
Might as well do them all at once, the ones that you can't get around to. Why not? Now, come here, tell us what we can look forward to on Monday night. We've got a great lineup. You're sharing the stage with John McNichol, Claudia Buckley, David James, Jack Keogh. You're going to be up on stage there. Obviously, it's a Christmas concert, a bit of Christmas, a bit of the old favourites as well, I'm sure, Michael.
Absolutely, yeah. And I'm looking forward to meeting everyone else that's on the stage as well. And, you know, Claudia started her own band, which is fantastic for the business, and she's a great person. But I'm friends with everybody up there, and of course David is a mighty man. And I'm looking forward to it. I'll be sharing the stage with them, and we'll be singing all of the songs that people will know, and a sprinkling of Christmas songs, and it's just going to be a great night. Funny enough, the Highland Radio concert is very special to me because it was the very first concert, the very first show I ever did in my life was a Highland Radio concert. And it was in the Mount Errigal. And I walked on. I didn't even have a band at the time. I walked on and I just released The Near's the Perfect and I sang it. And that was my very first introduction to, you know, the big crowds and the big shows. And so, yeah, it's special. It's special to be going back on Monday.
So it's our fault. No, I'm only joking. Michael, that's brilliant.
It's Highland Radio's fault.
And it's a lovely story, actually. It's going to be quite important for you to get back there as well, back up on that same stage as well. And we're delighted to have you back up, Michael. You've always put on a great show and clearly, you know, one of our top performers across all musical genres. It's a real treat to be able to have you up on Monday. We can't wait to see you, Michael. And best of success for the Christmas next year and with Classic Country Melody and the forthcoming album. Michael, always a pleasure. Can't wait, to see you Monday night and keep safe. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Greg. Take care.
All right, that's Michael English there, and this is the Classic Country Melody.
She's not like me, she's out and fancy free. flirting with the boys and all her charms. Ah, but I still love her so. And brother, don't you know, I'd welcome her right back here in my arms. Well, there must be some way I can lose these lonesome blues.
Watch the show live now on YouTube, Facebook and at highlandradio.com.
Now, the Department of Sport has confirmed it will enter a provisional grant agreement with the FAI project team to build the 5,500-person capacity state-of-the-art venue for Finn Harps. It's the new stadium there. As you might remember, Paul McLoone joined us in June of this year, voicing his frustration at the slow progress. Paul, good morning to you. Thanks for rejoining us.
Thank you. Greg, good morning to you.
Right, okay. Do you, I mean, obviously we all welcome this most recent announcement. Do you feel it vindicates you speaking out, or do you think we would have arrived at this position in any case?
Well, as you know, Greg, I've worked in the public service myself before I retired all my life. And definitely you have to jump up and down now and again to make your voice heard. So I think it was the right thing to do, as was proven by the award of the funding. Like myself and just a few other guys, just shooting the breeze, if you like, Patsy Lafferty, Letterkenny, Barty McLinn, Ballybuffet, Barry McElhinney from Inishowen, just the four of us got together. We've put together a series of applications just to help out Finn Harps, and now we've been awarded in total $5.7 million. So I would think that's good vindication, Greg.
What does this mean actually in terms of getting this project up and running in earnest? How far away are we from that? Because we do know Finn Harps themselves have recently sort of started a big fundraiser with a view to progressing this project.
Yeah, well, as I said, we're just a project team. We're independent of Finn Harps. We're not directors or anything like that, but we have secured this money on their behalf. So if I was Finn Harps, actually, I'd just get the show on the road. I know they have to borrow money, they'll have to take risks, but planning permission expires in September of next year, and there's a time, like any of us building a house, where you mightn't have all the money, you mightn't have everything in place, but I think it's time now. I think the whole county's waiting on it. Just if I was Finn Harps, I'd get the show on the road, get moving. I think, without a doubt, Greg, that the whole county will get behind it. You know, I know that the guys in Finn Harps sometimes do me head in, but, you know, I think over time it'll take them another $2 million to do it. They will say otherwise, but I can tell you I know the score with the public service, so I would think if they get the show on the road, the county will support it, but I think the time for talking is over. There's enough money there to get it going. We've also secured $1 million overdraft for them from the Western Development Commission. We've got them a $500,000 deferred payment from one of the contractors. So, you know, all the ducks are in a row, you know, but not everything's in place, but it never is when you're trying to get a project going.
Listen, so Paul, I know we all have to work together on this, and we're all pulling in the one direction, and yeah. I certainly don't want to stir anything or throw any fuel on the fire.
Yeah.
But is some of your frustration now turning towards Finn Harps? Do you think they're being overcautious? You know, you're speaking like someone who's working very hard for Finn Harps, but at the same time has quite a bit of frustration stroke criticism. I don't know how to frame that. But as I say, I don't want to stir anything, but I know you're a straight shooter as well.
No, no, you're dead right. But the fact of life is that the planning permission expires in September next year. So you have to have three quarters of the stadium construction underway at that stage. So that's why I'm saying to you, Greg, the time for talking is over. Let's get on with it. There's enough funding there. Like the guys that I've worked with, are all volunteers like myself. We secured that funding. I think the Finn Harps crowd are great people. They're very difficult for them. They're all voluntary, and it's a tricky job working in the League of Ireland, working with the FAI. So we're all absolutely behind them. If I'm saying something, Greg, that you think is stirring it, then that's good, because the time for talking, as I said earlier, is over. The whole county wants to see this happen. So let's get on with it.
Are you also suggesting that the right decisions have to be made really quickly, or we could see this whole project fall to pieces?
Well, the planning deadline, you know, sharpens the focus of everybody. So we have to get it going. And I don't think, you know, as I say, I'd shoot the breeze. And as you say, I shoot straight from the hip. I have arguments with Finn Harps, but they're all great people. They know where I stand. I know where they stand. But we're going to help them get this done. And I think the whole county is going to do the exact same thing. So, you know, I wouldn't blame them for being cautious and there's risks to be taken and all that. And I fully, fully appreciate that. But we're going to help them. And I just think the whole county will row in behind them. Mm. And let's get it going. And I think there's extremely good people on the board of Finn Harps. And I think if they go for it, it's going to happen. And we're going to help them. And I think the whole county will. And if I'm frustrated, I don't mean to be, but there is a deadline and we have to get the show on the road. It's as simple as that. And the money's now in place, Greg.
Yeah, you've talked about your endeavours and with the other three gentlemen that you mentioned. And then you also reiterate that you're not a director of Finn Harps. What is that relationship there? Because, you know, I'm not saying you're off on a solo run whatsoever, but there does seem to be a direction of traffic from, you know, the directors of Finn Harps and then a director of traffic from another group of individuals working with and for Finn Harps. But there is a separation there. Again, I could be misreading the room, but it just seems a little bit strange to me.
No. Well, you see, to secure funding in this day and age, you know, with the transparency and that, we have to be independent. You know, when the funding comes, and the department are absolutely insistent on this, is that there's an independent management board to oversee the project. In other words, that any funding they give as a department does not go into the bank account of Finn Harps.
Understood. I get
it's
it
an independent bank account to construct the stadium. And that's on their insistence. It's not, we'd love just to be, you know, all working on the same bank account as Finn Harps, but that's not the way the rules of the game work. So we just have to work, you know, with due diligence, do it properly. And but there's no animosity. There's no arguing with anyone, but it's time to get the show on the road.
Brilliant stuff. And on that note, we'll leave it. Thanks for that. Just wanted to clarify it because I'm sure if I'm thinking something, maybe the listeners are. So great to have it all clarified and that we understand. Paul, thanks very much for your time. Best wishes, Paul McLoone there. Okay, back with more shortly. Right, okay. Our final hamper of the week goes to this special person, a super sister, as she's described. And as I say, I don't want to be too soppy on it, but it's been lovely reading your nominations for people special to you. So this person will get the surprise of the beautiful hamper to keep them full of chocolate over Christmas. Hi, I'd like to nominate my baby sister. Where to begin? Since she was a child, she was different. She mothered and looked after everyone, including elderly neighbours and relations. At 13, she was voluntarily assisting a neighbour with housework and home help issues that no 13-year-old should. As an adult, she's helped so many people, both with her work and private life. She's gone above and beyond with every situation she faces, never complains, unlike me. On that matter, a few years ago, she noticed that I was struggling mentally. I was drowning and she pulled me up. She sorted me out. Again, no words for how much she did for me. She has four beautiful children. One was born with additional needs. And, well, that child could not have been born to a better mother. She fights her cause, gives her every opportunity, as she does with the others. Gets her to every therapy, puts in so much additional educational work, all whilst holding down a job. I genuinely don't know where she gets all her strength and energy. I'm tired even writing this. And how? Anyhow, that's my nomination, my super sister. And your super sister is going to win that beautiful hamper from Cadbury. Really worthy winner there. Tomorrow we've got a €250 shop voucher, one for all shop voucher. That's going to be the prize tomorrow. So we're going to open up the phone lines, the text lines again for you. Speaking of phone and text lines, since we announced 10 days of €1,000 a day, we're going to be giving €1,000 a day from Monday away as part of our mega card draw. Again, if you are inclined to buy a ticket, today's the day to do it, today or tomorrow, then you're in 11 draws, every single prize a cracker, 10 €1,000 and the car worth over €30,000. It's a beauty. So 11 of you are going to do really, really well between now and Christmas. So if you get in now, you're in all of the draws. We have extra stuff on here to answer phone calls if you prefer to do it over the phone, 07491 25000. Our website's really busy as well, and plenty of people calling in. We're more than happy. A lot of people don't deal with cash or prefer to deal with people face-to-face. It's really important that we keep that connection with our listeners as well. So you can call in to us here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny as well. So I can't wait. We're going to do it a different way. You're going to have to be listening to Highland, or at least have your phone close to you, because we'll be ringing someone across different shows Monday to Friday next week, Monday to Friday following week. You have to answer within 5 or 6 rings. Answer a simple question. That's not really a complication of it. And if someone doesn't answer, and it's going to break my heart if it happens on this show, if someone doesn't answer, we roll that over to later in the day. And if they don't answer, then it's £2,000 the next day, and on it goes. But I believe we'll do really well. We'll have great success. Okay, let me see. Let's go to some of your comments here towards the end of the programme. Watching the debate with the Independents, Matty McGrath, the Healy Rays on immigration, talking on their constituencies. Politicians never listen to people. 700 refugees have come in this week before Christmas. People from Africa can't come straight. They have had to come from another country. I'm a daughter with 3 children living in a wooden house for 4 or 5 years. Her and her husband work. They can't get a mortgage. How can we solve housing? I wonder if it's anything to do with the fact that it's rural TDs who represent rural communities. Maybe they see and hear rural communities and the effects of large numbers in small villages and towns with absolutely no facilities for locals or poor immigrants. From what I can see, people don't listen to rural communities anymore, from farmers to fishermen, all neglected for years. Why are we being called racist and far right when we put out when we are out on our streets every day protesting for the Palestine community? This is recreated by the government, not the people. Ireland is not racist. We're just sick of the inequality, and no one gets labelled far right or racist on this show either. Greg, I think what you have to remember is that people don't mind helping, but when we are having to put them on the streets, it's time to stop. All homelessness is bad. Another, the state refuses to have a referendum because every poll carried out shows that the vast majority of Irish people oppose the demographic destruction of Ireland through mass immigration. Another, good morning, Greg. There you go again, giving out misinformation. 20% of the working population is immigrants, so please correct yourself. 20% of the population are immigrants not born here. You need to remember the media's job first to report the facts, not fiction. Okay. I'll double check that, of course, and I am not an authority. If I get something wrong, I'm more than happy to reflect it. I'm not here expressing my views either. I'm platforming other people's views as well, and where need be, to put opposing views to tease out a conversation. The guest yesterday has the view that immigration, because that is what is being said worldwide, is seen, it's only Irish media that's not aware of it. We are open and easy to enter and open everything free. Many we talk to actually say this. An asylum seeker arrived here and in 3 weeks he was in the High Court because there was no accommodation for him. Now, in all honesty, how did that happen? I don't believe he figured out our laws and courts that quick. Well, there are NGOs that would be working with him to take a test case. You can be sure of that. There has to be a limit on how many immigrants are allowed in, population size, infrastructure, GDP, etc. If not, it's a recipe for disaster. Let's have a referendum. More coming in here. I, for one, am sickened by the inherent racism of the vast majority of your respondents, Greg. I find it vile, invidious and disgusting. Again, I try on all issues to try and invite people of all different points of view to get involved in the conversation. But sometimes I think it's those that maybe are more angry or motivated that text into radio shows, and maybe those that are happy enough don't see an issue. Don't take the phone out and sort of go, you know, I think everything is rosy in the garden at the moment. I think that's just a factor of how people might communicate. Greg made a comment yesterday that if all immigrants left the country, we wouldn't have enough nurses and doctors and other professions. Caller says this is not the case. For every Irish professional immigrating to Australia or other country, we're taking in an equal amount of unemployed individuals without these skills. There's a lot of talk of far-right, but countries such as Sweden and Italy are run by a far-right government and are the most civilised countries in the world. I don't get into the far-right left. It's generally accepted that if all the immigrants working in healthcare, hospitality and other areas just left the country like that there. Don't forget there's many nurses, doctors from here that move elsewhere because they don't want to work here. The money's not good enough. They're not being forced out or dragged out. There is a general consensus that many services would collapse or be under severe pressure if the immigrant population that work here moved away tomorrow. I'm not saying that. That's not my opinion. I've seen and read studies in relation to that and heard commentary from people who know more about it than I do. We were talking to the Cunninghams yesterday. That poor family not getting answer about the death of the young brother. But I think another example of discrimination against Inishowen in Donegal. Them brothers need answers and should get them. Bless them. Terribly difficult for them. Look at. Thank you so much to all of you who texted in and messaged in, and who understand as well too that, you know, we're not pushing an agenda here or whatever it might be. We're just trying to give people a platform to speak. But for me, Greg Hughes and the team, Caroline Orr and Shannon working on the show, have a lovely Thursday. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning as usual from 9.